Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Join us every weekday at this time to discuss news, spend time in the Word, and receive answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, welcome everybody. This is End Times Friday, and this happens, this will be airing the day after Christmas, so maybe some people will have an opportunity to spend even some more relaxed time listening to it, because hopefully nobody has to go back to work, although a few people may, and enjoy your Christmas season. And we're Denny Weinberg, who is a co-host with me on End Times Fridays. You know, Denny, why don't you, again, just kind of tell everybody, you know, where you live and you know, what you've been doing. Denny's a Messianic Jew, and that's why we do understand and have this relationship with Eric and Rabbi from Israel, because they're actually good friends of yours. And, you've known Eric, I think.
I've known Eric ever since kindergarten.
Kindergarten, yeah.
We were in kindergarten together.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's really well educated, isn't he, on things of the world.
Well, he's made it his life. I think, you know, part of the whole of his movement to Israel, I think, was about, I think, both rekindling, you know, his strong beliefs in a strong Israel, but also I think it was about having an influence on people's thinking, because he seems to really thrive when he's talking about it.
Yeah. Where did, you know, through your, you know, education and career, where did you get so interested in research and getting information?
You know, I think, first of all, I'm an engineer, so it's probably a natural part of my curiosity, but also part of my education, that engineers think that as though everything has a specific set of causes and a predictable outcome. It's, you know, it's a great way to approach life, but it doesn't work that way either. And that's why discovering Christ and that there is a spiritual answer to all these questions was so important in my life, because I came from a place of saying, I must be able to have the answer to any question there is if you just study deep enough. So I have a natural curiosity and a great appreciation for what can't be known. Now.
Well, it's quite fun that you really enjoy looking at that research, and you're good at it in terms of getting information, and it's always been very helpful. Last time we were talking about, again, the enemy, and we, you know, revisit, you know, Revelation 13 is, you know, there's going to be a one world government economic system driven by Satan, Antichrist, and false prophet. And think of it, remember, it's all about spirituality and truths about that. And so he's a counterfeit God. So he has, you know, his Messiah, who would be the Antichrist, and then what he would be equivalent to the Holy Spirit would be the false prophet. So he's got an unholy trinity that is moving everybody to worship Satan, which has been his goal ever since the beginning, you know. And so it's a spiritual aspect of it. And we talked about in Revelation 13 that he's behind it all. John 10:10, that he's come to kill, steal, and destroy. And then Luke 11, that he said one of his biggest strategies is chaos and a house divided, because a house divided can't stand. And when you think of, when we're trying to portray this in a bigger way, is that the world becomes divided and full of chaos that nobody can resolve by itself, which requires a whole new solution. And then Satan comes along with the one world government offering the solution, which, by the way, will appear good. Will have aspect of everybody believe in it, including believers who will be deceived, you know. And I just want to, you know, kind of read a couple verses here about his nature, and then we can come back to the issue of, you know, debt and then other aspects of it. But in Revelation 12, it says that, in verse 10, it says, in verse 7, it says, war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. The great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, and he was cast to the earth, and the angels were cast out with him. So that, think of his nature is what? It's to deceive the entire world. And how would you define deception?
It sort of dangles something up here, look over here, and you take your eyes off the things you know to be true because you're distracted by this. And it's
Yeah. And think of that, it appears to be true and people see it as true, but the truth is not. It's not truth. It's false. Deception. And deception is keep looking at this and let me attract you with this that looks like it's true. But underneath it all, I am, you know, deceiving you and manipulating you to believe a truth, which is a lie. And that's, and Satan says he approaches the entire world that way, you know, he's lies. And then Christ says this, and this is in John chapter 8. He says that this is in starting in verse 42. He says, if God were your father, you would love me. And if I came from God and I am here, I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you understand that I say it is because you cannot hear me? You are the father of the devil, and your will is to do the father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character. He is a liar and the father of lies.
Wow.
So that he's saying that the enemy is, you know, talk about the father. He's the source of lies and deception. So it's, you know, consider this and look over here and process that. I'm going to give you enough evidence for you to think it's true, but without the understanding and the discernment and the wisdom of God, you're going to be deceived because it's not true. It's false. And I'm the father of that. And by the way, he's really good at it.
He's good at it. You know, he's also good at knowing when and how to dangle that. When you're in a weakened state or you've had a loss or something isn't working out, this idea of more and more chaos, it makes us all much more prey to, you know, to lies because what we're experiencing doesn't feel right. There's something not good about what we're experiencing.
So talk then, let's go back and start to talk a little bit more about the deception of debt and why the world has accepted it as an okay thing, but underneath it all structurally, it's not sustainable because the truth is you can't continue at some point in time to support it. You know, what, as you, maybe you could talk about a couple of statistics that you brought before, and then let's talk about that a little bit further.
I think we were brought up at a time when our schooling included an understanding of basic economics, how our governments work, and that's not true today at all. So young people especially are very prone to unrealistic expectations that are set politically, for sure. Look what happened in New York. We've got a mayor of New York who basically said, I know our city is economically non-viable, and nobody can afford to live there, nobody can afford to eat, nobody can buy anything. The answer is, I'm going to give you your heart's desire. Just vote for me. And not only that, not only did, you know, was, and it worked, it worked. And so, you know, educated, especially young people, educated young people went for it full bore. Didn't ask even the basic questions. Where's the money going to come from? The idea is there's somebody else out there the money will come from. Plenty of rich people. That must be enough for me to get whatever I want. So I think it's an example of, and clearly, if a city's going to spend more money, it's going to be debt burdened. Because there's just proof after proof after proof that raising taxes doesn't necessarily generate revenue. We've got that evidenced all over the place. In fact, lowering taxes has more of a tendency to stimulate growth and investment and risk-taking. At least that was true of our generation who grew up understanding that there's something attractive about taking a risk and creating value, especially value that's going to help the world, which I think we all saw happen as we grew up. But that's an example, a very local example, where not only did people go for the idea, I can get something for free, but people who had other interests, like Jews in New York, the largest population in the world outside of Israel, decided to vote for somebody who was anti-Israel. It just blew my mind. But the idea was that, you know, here I'm dangling freebies and everything will be okay. And people left their senses. And I'm sure a lot of people who didn't have a very strong spiritual center didn't have to give anything up there. And they're just going for it. This is happening all over the world. We saw Venezuela, basically one of the strongest economies in the world, destroyed in just a few years over the same kinds of claims. And, you know, it begins with governments having both the ability to spend money that has to be borrowed and their ability to convince people that it's okay.
Yeah. Now, think about a little bit what you just said is that the world and people tend to think that they have principles and they will operate out of those principles. But what you just said is it seems like people are willing to basically sublimate those principles for the sake of the economy. And the economy being my economy, my personal economy. It really, that's what trumps everything, is my view of what's going to happen to me and what do we do with that. So that, just like you stated there in New York, of all the places of capitalism there is in the world, New York is kind of the epitome of it. And you would have thought, of course, we're not going to have a socialist, anti-Jewish person running our city. But they did. Okay, why? And you said it. Well, because particularly young generation and middle class and lower class, they are at a point, and this goes back to the, you know, we want to talk about the debt, is that they can't sustain living there anymore. And they don't see any hope, even with a quote capitalist system, because of the structure of it, the debt load and what's happening and the prices of housing and the prices of automobiles and the prices of food, we can't exist. So why not? Let's go protect ourselves and vote in somebody that can take care of us. Now, think about, and I'd like you to talk about this, Danny, where's the deception of that thinking? Because they think, oh, it'll be fine. What's the deception of that?
Well, it's hard for us to make a direct link between our inability to afford our lives and debt that's been incurred by federal government, state governments, local governments. And maybe even companies, but we don't see it. If it was our own household, of course we'd see it. We'd say, my gosh, I don't have any money left in my checking account. What did I spend? We'd start looking over and we'd say, well, my gosh, my credit card bills, I'm like writing these huge checks to my credit card company and my balance is barely going down. It must be interest that's the problem. We can see that. We can't see the direct effect. How much inflation, you know, during the last 6 years is the result of federal spending? How much, and it's there, it's built in, but it's very hidden, it's very hard to see. Because we're not, especially young people, weren't taught that financial prudence is going to be felt in every aspect of your life and expect your governments to be prudent on every penny. Don't spend money you don't have. That conversation's not there at all. Instead of it, what we hear in political commentary is, it's the economy stupid. It's nothing else. It's not about how is our culture, are our cities safe? It's not about, you know, do we value what it means to be Americans? What we hear is it's about the economy. So people have been told for the last 20 years, it's about the economy, about the economy, about the economy. And so that's what we focus on, rather than what does it mean to have a healthy economy? And people have been told, vote your pocketbook, your personal pocketbook. I don't have enough money. I'll vote for somebody who promises I do. And and I think people of our generation don't fall for that as easily, because we've seen it. Really down economies. We've lived through some really bad economic crashes, and these young people haven't. They lived through 9/11, but it didn't have the same personal economic effect on them. They somehow lived through the COVID crisis and came out of it feeling like something good happened for them. I don't have to go to work every day. I can work from home. I mean, you know, you'd think that after that, people would say, my gosh, we have to be very, very thoughtful and careful about having money set aside for a crisis in case it happens. And our countries need to do that as well. And we shouldn't spend money on anything we can't account for in terms of value being created in some way. None of that conversation is there.
Yeah. And think of, you know, okay, the government, in course of the new government in New York City said, we are going to take care of you. Well, that means by definition, and here's the question that nobody's asking, like you said, well, where's the money going to come from? Well, their answer is we're going to tax the rich. But what that does is, and it's been proven for the, you know, for my whole lifetime, is that the people with money adjust to the new scenario. And what'll happen in New York is the rich people will flee, is that the taxes are so onerous that I'll go to some other state like Florida, for example, or Texas, that doesn't have this tax and I can live there okay. And yeah, I'm going to take a loss on my real estate here, but at least I'm going to get out of here. And partly because of what happened with COVID, I can maintain my company or maintain my jobs and I just live in a different place. And so the deception is that even his solution of providing for everybody isn't really sustainable. So by definition, that's going to collapse too. So here's what I see about it is I think it's a giant test to see if people will respond to the thought of if I could solve your economic situation, really, you would vote for me or you would accept it. And remember when the one world government comes, and we just read it in Revelation 13, the world readily accepts it because it really, and when they do it on a worldwide basis, it actually does work, at least short term, because they now control the whole thing and reset the entire thing. By the way, one of the conditions of the one world government when they set it up will be to basically reset the debt. In other words, just eliminate debt. And we control it all, so we're going to eliminate it all and start over. And you don't have that problem anymore, and we'll be able to provide you income coming up again from a resetting of an economic system that can support it. But the solution is you'll willingly accept it because it'll be a perceived great solution to your economic problem. And the deception today is that people think it will work all by itself. Like, for example, at the microcosm of New York City, the truth is it won't work. It'd have to be global. I think they're testing people's resolve to, well, if that's true, I would accept that against even my thought, like a Jewish person voting for it. Like, I guess somebody that doesn't even it wants to get rid of me, but yeah, I'll vote for it anyway.
Yeah. You know, it's the thought is that wealthy people or wealthy companies have a big pile of cash that they're spending on fancy restaurants and fancy clothes and all of that. And that is true. Wealthy people spend more money on things, especially unnecessary things, than people who aren't. But the reality is most of that wealth is invested somewhere else in the economy. People who accumulate wealth immediately start thinking about how can I put that wealth to work?
Sure.
And that those investments go to municipal bonds in cities all over the United States. That's money that is building hot freeways and parking lots and expanding airports. And so, you know, all kinds of infrastructure, repairing bridges, and they're being paid a reasonable return, but generally tax-free return. So you can't say that by raising taxes, I can get to that. What may very well happen is some of those people will take that money and they'll invest it somewhere else. And so I don't know the numbers, but I wonder what percentage of wealthy people in New York are invested in New York through municipal bonds, other municipal investments, corporate debt, you know, that's personally financed or guaranteed. So the loss of investors is a very damaging idea. And to people who will vote for a socialist in a city like that, the thought is there's a pile of cash I can attach. And then the thought isn't I'm going to demotivate investment in the city that I want to see improved. And that's what will happen. That money will leave the state, not just because the person moves and takes their stash with them. It's because people might stay, continue to live in New York and invest their money in other states that have a better promise of a return.
What, as you look at the, you know, this statistics you gave about the debt that's not sustainable on a worldwide basis, what do you see as the implication of that? Because right now the deception is it doesn't matter. It can get as big as it wants to, and we'll just grow into it, and we can handle it. But it's starting to become pressure, including the Fed is having difficulty normally doing things that they normally should do, which right now would be actually with inflation, what they should do is raise interest rates to bring that back down, which is what they typically would do. But they, because of the way the structure is, if they do that, it'll actually stimulate the collapse faster than I think they're willing to do it. Because structurally, if they do it, that means all of the interest payments by the governments are going to overwhelm them. So what do you see as some of the implication as to are we approaching and maybe it's a purposeful, but are we approaching a crisis point of the worldwide debt? And what should we watch for in that regard?
Yeah, I think if it's true that 10% of the worldwide debt is U.S. debt, and yet the United States is most of the worldwide economy, it's probably between China and the United States, it's probably 2/3 of it. It's a huge part of it. So that would suggest that if somebody were to say, I'm going to step back and I'm going to wipe it all out And it's not going to affect everyone, every country the same way. Big winners and big losers. It'd be very easy to wipe out the U.S. debt, you know, because it's such a small amount of debt. But that means that the United States economic power is going to have to fund the debt that's been written off in the rest of the world, the 90% of the debt that's not U.S. So being a strong economy and a relatively small portion of the debt is not good for Americans. It doesn't seem like that. We would have to make a decision to solve our own debt problems ourselves. And the world would have to deal with its own debt, the rest of the world, which is probably much worse. What I hear is arguments that say, well, we should be more like the rest of the world. They're much further in debt than we are. We can almost pay off our debt. We can't, but we can almost pay it off with our annual gross domestic product. The world passed that, you know, that point years and years and years ago. The idea of growing our economy with a mandate that we will pay our debt down, which some have been talking about for many, many years, still seems like it's part of the answer. We have to reduce our debt. And even the current administration is not necessarily saying that they want to refund money to taxpayers, probably to help with the next set of elections. But the debt's not sustainable once it exceeds our GDP. And we're getting really close to that if we're not already there.
Yeah. And the magnitude of that worldwide is that, particularly like Europe, that is semi-socialist, they're already in deep trouble in terms of being able to sustain their economies, and they're having really difficulty. Interesting enough, China's having trouble. Russia's having trouble. The world is pushing up against this magnitude of debt that they can't sustain. And, you know, the question is, you know, maybe it's purposeful to get it to that point so that it has to require a one world solution, not just the United States or even just a country, but rather if everybody does it, then everybody starts over and everybody says, I'm willing to do that because it solves the problem.
Yeah. And it does, for somebody who would view that as the only effective solution, they can't take a local country view because the winners and losers will be awesome. I mean, who knows at the end of that, once those deals are made to ratify, you know, to settle debt between and among 270 countries who all owe each other money, and have all these other, trade-related deals. All of that gets recast. Who emerges and who disappears? The United States runs the risk of disappearing from as an economic power. For me, that would be terrible because of all that the United States has done for the world. I suspect people who vote for a socialist for mayor of New York could care less what happens to the United States.
Yeah, and maybe because we know in the end that it looks like the United States is not a major factor. And maybe that's part of it, is that they willingly give it up because it actually benefits the people who are going to be the recipients of that without a care about really the vibrancy or the importance or the significance of the economy anymore. It's just, hey, we get our problem solved, you know. So it's an interesting thought.
When we get back together, one of the other interesting things to talk about, as you said that, is we're looking today at the time we're recording this at this horrible development in Minnesota, and that somehow in the name of taking care of freshly minted immigrants, immigrant community, billions, maybe at least a billion, maybe billions of dollars were stolen from the residents of that country, promised to go to social services, and they went to basically build terrorist networks in other countries. Yeah. How did that happen? Would that have happened under a capitalist? Would that have happened in a state that, you know, had economic discipline? Or does that only happen in a place where the sort of the blind, you know, drive to give money to others, is the approach?
Yeah. And particularly money they didn't have.
Right.
Well, thanks, Denny. And we'll pick this up again as we process this further about the chaos and what's stimulating this and what the outcomes might be. As we think about looking at 2026, maybe next week we can talk a little bit about some of the other factors that are happening, and then what would be our thought about how do we approach 2026 as a believer to seek God's wisdom, knowing that these chaotic things are happening and being put in place. And we can talk a little bit about the Supreme Court is going to rule on the tariffs, which will have an impact all by itself. Either way, interesting enough, because remember, the enemy's goal is chaos. You know, it's not, he doesn't really care about the result of the immediacy. It's about, it stimulates chaos. So Heavenly Father, we thank you for giving us a clarity that, you know, the enemy is a pure deceiver, the father of lies, that he deceives the whole world. And we just pray that the only way to counter deception is to stay with you and receive truth, to live in that truth, to know how you give us discernment about what's going on, not to be deceived, but rather to see you, which we all ultimately know there'll be deception about the mark of the beast that will look like it's really a good thing. And maybe even people say it's of you, and deception is it's not, and you want us not to take the mark of the beast. So we just pray that we'll have some wisdom and clarity about that as we process these things. And thank you in Christ's name. Amen. Denny, have a great week. And people, if you have any questions about what we're discussing and would like to have some further clarifications, we'd love for you to send questions at abideministry.com, and we'd love to talk to you. And so, Denny, have a great holiday, and we will talk to you next week.
See you then.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments, and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.